you doing this morning? This is N0 TR.
Tom, I'm just checking out this radio. I think I got a buyer for it. I was wanting to see if it was sounding okay on your end.
Sir, let me turn my background radio down. Sorry about that. Listening to a little bluegrass. Sitting out here waiting on Bernice at the Clemson Eye Center for a regular 6-month appointment. Oh, it's nice outside. There was only one place left in the parking lot here. They're doing a lot of construction here, expanding the parking lot and building a million townhouses across the street there, I think. Jerry, you sound perfect. Great audio, full quality. Send 0 TR.
Make sure I didn't have anything laying on top of a wire or antenna wire or something. I think I'm running about 20-25 watts, something like that. But I wasn't real sure. I made sure I had the mic gain settings okay and that sort of thing. But I don't have a regular dual band mobile rig, and I'm thinking about picking one up. I had one a couple of years ago and liked it because I could run, 25 or 50 watts here at home if I needed to, and get into some repeater. I could hear them, but I got to make sure I can get into them a little better than my other 5 or 10 watt rigs. But this is just a monobander, and I'm thinking about getting something that's got picking back up a mobile rig. It's got a little bit more power and may help me out on my satellite operations too a little bit.
I was looking here. I lowered my power, so tell me if I'm still in there good. This is an FT7800. It's dual band, but I never used the other band, but I know you would with satellite stuff. But it's been an excellent radio. I have one in the truck, too, Jerry. Am I still coming through okay?
In every respect, it is good. It's got a little bit of noise in the background, but, sometimes repeaters. The receive sometimes it has a little crack, but that's got nothing to do with what you're putting into it, because you're sounding good, the audio is good, sounds just like you. The speaker on this rig is kind of small, so it doesn't have a lot of bass to it, but it sounds just like you do normally on something with a bigger speaker, as far as I can tell. Well, I'm limited here. But this is Icom 2300H, a 65-watt monoband, and I'm thinking about picking up a Yeezy FTM 200, which is a dual bander that's got APRS. The thing about the Yeezys, even though it's not a full duplex, you can put the transmit and receive on two different bands and have a split frequency and operate the satellites and just tune it as the Doppler shift changes a little bit for the FM stuff. Nowadays, unfortunately, you can run 5 watts for most time of a satellite and get in most of it. Now, a lot of these guys run so much power, you about got to have 10 to 25 watts to capture that repeater.
A lot of background noise here. I got two bobcats and a dozer and some other contraption. It's got these little cogs on a great big wheel in front of it that they're compacting the dirt with, and then a construction site for many, many acres just beyond that, and I can see it all going on. So I'm surprised there isn't more background noise. I never realized how much soil, dirt, rocks, and all that they could move with one of them bobcats and how quickly they can do it. It's just totally amazing how much that man's moved so far. Now, this other one here, he's set up with a forklift on the front of it, and he's lifting up big drain pipes and positioning them. Man, there's a lot of headwork goes into developing one of these sites, ain't there, Jerry?
Move hundreds of tons of dirt sometimes. The guy that cleared the lot next door to us had a bobcat, and also had one of these little mini excavators. I say mini, but it was a trailerable type, and it looked pretty small to me. But he had the gripper arms on that thing, and I tell you what, it was like going through pickup sticks. We just pull an individual tree limb out and and moving around him, and he was the best I'd ever seen operating that thing. He'd get a lot of work done by himself and move stuff, and he'd do some digging too, but he was doing a lot of moving the trees and that thing. He was just so deft with it. It was just like somebody had their fingertips picking up stuff.
And they had backhoe rodeos back in Kansas. And I had a friend that's passed away now. He always won those usually. It's just totally amazing how precise they can be. Looking on over, there's just dump truck after dump truck moving all the time. And it looks like a D8 dozer up there. They just shut it down. I know when they did mine land reclamation back there in Kansas, they had D9s and... Oh my, the price of those things then was just unbelievable, but I can't imagine. I bet they're over $1 million now. But we're building a parking lot here to expand it, but it, just beyond that parking lot is, oh my gracious. I never did get to sit and watch a construction site like that. I was just sitting here reading my recent issue of American Handgunner, and some old boy was powder coating lead bullets. I just started to look at it. Can't tell you much about it yet, but I never heard of him doing that. I had a friend, and he used to coat them with Teflon and then shoot them at high velocities, Jerry.
Seen those coated bullets like that, you know, years ago. It was Smith & Wesson used to make a knife lamp, which is coated nylon bullet, and those were, they could put a soft lead, soft lead, and it wouldn't lead up the barrel of the gun. Also, wouldn't have any lead residue for shooting range, indoor shooting ranges. But turns out that it made a good defensive load because you could use a soft swage lead bullet, cut it with nylon. It wouldn't gum up the bore, but it would expand well too.
So yeah, that'd be a quick process. I never did swedge bullets, but I've cast many, many, many thousands of them. I haven't in a long time. I need to do that for my son-in-law. I gave him a Model 27 Smith several years ago, and I gave him some 215-grain semi-watt cutter gas jet bullets from a Lyman mold that I got that you can't even get anymore for $357. It was 215 grains, Jerry, if you can imagine that. I never seen them before, never seen them since. But he said that's the most accurate bullet he's ever shot out of that pistol.
A pair of Model 28s, he's got the 4-inch and the 6-inch. These are all old, pretty old guns. Both of them were just about pristine when he picked them up. That picture this still has a finish, the 27 does, but you know, the 27 and 28 cylinders are shorter. You can't run that big, you know, Keith bullet. I can't remember that Lyman number it was, but the Keith bullet that semi-water cutter cast out about 173 with a gas jet. You can't put it and load it to the cannula lure on the in a 357 case. You have to load in a 38 case. Either that or drop it in over the cannula with a about somewhere, you know, just past it. But I always found that pretty interesting because the 19 cylinders and the newer cylinders, 60, the 686, those are all long enough where you can use that bullet full in full 357 case.
Send 0TR. Yeah, they're 150,000s longer. Well, that's funny. I didn't know that, Jerry. I learned something. But that's a real long bullet, that 215 grain. But I got all the dimensions and everything written down. But it went fine through that 27. But I forget what velocity I loaded that up to now. I'd be just guessing. But I hard cast them. I dropped them into a 5-gallon bucket of water, and I had a gunny sack in the bottom of it, which you can't hardly find gunny sacks now, so it wouldn't damage the bullets, and then size and lubricated them. But they were 18 Brunel, and The line type's around 22 for now, if I remember rightly. So they was pretty hard, and you could drive them pretty good. But he wants me to make some more of them. I just been lazy. I got the lead to do it now, so I gotta sit down and do that one of these days. I like it to be no wind. I can't do it inside anymore. I used to, in my garage at home, I had a friend that was a tinsmith, and he made me a hood, and I had a exhaust up through the ceiling, but I can't do that in my house, so I have to be outside, and I like it to be calm, and I like it to be low humidity. Boy, it's low humidity now out there, I'll tell you, but they say we're going to get some rain, thankfully, by Friday. Jerry, I sure hope we do. It's really getting dry.
Ran for DJC. Yeah, they issued a lot of type, and we did wheel weights too before people got, you had to watch out for the road saw some of those things, because those things, when they melt, they'll just start popping all over the place. 16 is a really good, that's a good hardness. I run some casts and with gas checks, and about 38s were. And I can't remember the caster now. It's a commercial casting deal, and they have a. It's a similar. It's a. They cast out about 150 grains, I think, or maybe 160, and it's cast out about eight hardness, and but it's run with gas check, and it expands pretty well too. But the 16 is really, that's a good weight there. That's I always found that probably the most accurate 357 I had was a 7 Freedom Arms, which is a 6-shot, and it's a smaller one. It's about the size. It doesn't look like a whole lot bigger than a single 6. It's not as big as a Blackhawk, but it was a 6-shot, and it'll handle high pressures, you know, being made by Freedom Arms. And the most accurate bullet I shot in that one was probably a 180 grain cast. And I think it was, yeah, the canyon lure was up far enough where you didn't have to, you know, the cylinder was long enough where you could run a Keith bullet in it. But that 180 grain, it was very similar to what Federal loaded in their deer, 357 deer loaded for handguns years ago. And it was really accurate. I could, off a rest, I could easily put 5 shots in one hole at 25 yards back when my eyesight was. Eyesight was better than
20/20. You are, boy, you can't beat a deal like that. Well, one of the most interesting ones I ever cast was I ordered a bullet mold from Freedom Arms. It was a 454 Casal bullet, which that's a heck of a pistol, I'll tell you. But they even make bigger now, a 500 Smith. M460, Weatherby, I think, in a pistol. But I had a contender, and I had two barrels. And the one that would use shot shells, like 410s, I never could get any accuracy out of it with cast bullets. So I bought me a standard 45 long Colt instead of the one with the shot shells. And I cast those 300 grain gas check Freedom Arms bullets. And I could drive those things, now this is in a contender load, of course, a regular Colt blow to pieces, but it would, in my recollection sitting here, it was just a little over 1,000 foot a second, and boy, it was a one-hole shooter, just like you're talking about, but with that 10.5-inch barrel, you could reach out and touch someone real good.
Bill Baker, the guy that Freedom's Arms guys, you know, he told me that in SHOT Show quite a few years ago, he told me that, you know, you can run them. See, if you can run most of the guns a lot harder than you can stand the load for them, all the Freedom Arms stuff. But the thing was that he didn't recommend using the lead bullets unless you cast them personally yourself and tested them. Because if you get one from a commercial cast, you might get a soft one. If that soft one goes through there, it'll drive the pressure up about 70,000 or so, and that would not be a good result. The primer would be flat and couldn't lock up. He said it probably wouldn't blow the gun, but he said it'd be real uncomfortable at the very least. But that 180 grain load that I was running at Freedom Arms, it was doing over 1,000 or so easy. And But it was a handful. That was all I could handle. I can't handle heavy calibers even back then very well. But that 357, 180 grain at over 1,100 feet per second, that thing was a lot. I mean, that was a real handful. And the 45 in that same frame size, the Model 97, that daggum thing, well, you could shoot a 240 or 250 or 255 45 caliber out of that at easily at 1,000 feet per second. That gun only weighs about 35 ounces. There's no way I'd shoot one out of it. I could hold on to it.
And 0TR, just kind of leaving the gap there, and Burn 1 did. Well, Jerry, my brother, my dad gave him the Model 28 Highway Patrolman, and he gave me, or I bought it, I don't remember which now, the 27. And Dad was always good about that. But my brother was home on leave one time, and he was bragging about this Highway Patrolman being so powerful. So I said, well, Ron, I said, we're going to go out with John Rocky today. And I said, I want you to try shooting one of his pistols. And John had a 330 Herod, one to 357. That's even worse, if you want to call it. He had the 30 Herod that you had to fireform your cases and all. And we went out there and we shot that 357, and I said, okay, Ron, I said, I want you to try John's pistol here with this 30 Herod in the Contender. And he shot that thing, he turned around, his eyes were big, and he looked at me. He says, that's not a pistol. He says, that thing needs wheels on it.
That 30 Herod, that was basically had a setback. It had a improved, it's like an improved 30-30 case, I think. Isn't that what it used?
Had fireform the neck or something like that, Jerry. I never did do it. John did, but John, you walk in his bedroom at his house, and you had to step over the guns in the floor. That's how many guns he had. Oh, wow. I still wish I had that 20-gauge double SKB he had there, Ithaca. Boy, that was a beautiful shotgun. But he had every barrel you could ever imagine for the Contenders. But that 30 Herod had the knockdown power at 100 yards of a 44 Magnum.
Yeah, you said you had that. Did you have the that Contender barrel that used a hot shot cartridge? Is that the one that could shoot the 410 in it? Did that one, I know ATF went back and forth on having a rifle barrel with a fusion of shotgun and a short barrel shotgun and all that sort of thing when that Contender came out. But, you know, some of them had a choke tube that you attached to it, and they was actually shooting a 2.5-inch 410, I think. Then they came out with that 45 blade that had that extended shot capsule. Did you shoot either one of those or just the shot capsules?
No, mine shot the 410 cartridge, and I was thinking it was a 3-inch. It might have been a 2.5-inch, Jerry. It's been too many years now. But it shot a regular 410 shotgun shell in it. But when you shot lead bullets or jacketed bullets through it, you had that big relief there where the shotgun was before it engaged the rifling, whereas some bullets actually start out touching the riflings. Most are thousands or so back, I guess you'd call it. And I just couldn't get any accuracy out of it with any other kind of bullets. And the 410, so-so, it's about like shooting shot shells out of a pistol. They're pretty worthless as far as I'm concerned. I mean, if you shoot a snake at 10 feet with them, the snake will probably bite you before you can get away.
I think the only Contender I ever had was the early one that had that small frame, which was really nice. Made a nice handgun, single shot handgun. I never got the, I remember when those barrels were out, and $8 barrel I had in mind. I had a 357, an octagon, and a 22, and an octagon. I mean, I tell you what, I'd give a gold guinea to have that 22 in an octagonal barrel nowadays, because those things are just, I mean, that brings tremendous prices for the old ones.
I got my brother-in-law's K-22. I just love it. But I never had much luck with them shots. You know, you used to buy them Spears capsules, and then you fill them up with number 9 shot or number 12 shot, and then put the cap on them and seat them in. And, guys, you could throw a bottle out in the water, you know, in an old strip pit there. And a lot of times it wouldn't even break the bottle at about 10 feet away. It scattered so much, so I wasn't too high on them. But when I bought the regular 45 long Colt barrel for that contender, it was a one-hole shooter. It shot real good.
Shot shells aren't good for much past about 8 or 10 feet, I don't think. I know I've got some of the number 9s and 38, that makes them with number 4s in them, but there's a few of them. About all you're going to do is, you know, unless you got the velocity would be high in the 357, you really have to go up to a 44 or 45 to get enough shot in it. And even then, they use number 9s, they'll use number 10s or 11s for snakes and small critters, because the pattern's just not dense enough on them. And I think they do a little better with longer barrels as well. I use mine out of a Model 60, and also, yeah, but actually, the 22 Magnums are work about as good as anything. That shot shell, 12 shot, but again, you got to be pretty damn close to get him, and then on top of that, you have to shoot him more one time, too. which if you're real close, you might have to do a little leprechaun dance while you're shooting as well.
You got that right. Well, I'll tell you, Merle, my neighbor, was a gunsmith, and he loaded some of the in the 45 ACP, and he loaded some in, I don't know if it was 44 Russian or 44 Spatial, probably a Spatial. He had both in the old Colt Frontiers or whatever they call them. They were real old, nice models. And then he loaded some in 45. Up in that area, you got enough shot in them that they were pretty good. But up to 357, they're pretty worthless. I got some in 9 now. I've never shot them at anything, because most snakes, I just pick them up and move them. And had one by the chicken house the other day, and I took him out to the timber and turned him loose. It was just a black snake. But one day I went out to a friend of mine's place, and he had a great big strip pit, and I took my girls and my dad, and we went fishing. Wasn't catching anything on the bank, so I just pushed Jim's John boat out in the water and took the kids out, Amy and Shelly, and they were little then. And lo and behold, here comes a snake swimming across the pit. And it was very unusual, because it looked like a bobber sitting on the water. Whereas most of the snakes, up there in Kansas, were like water snakes, common water snakes and that. We call them water moccasins, but they weren't. And they were mostly submerged, and their head had come out, but you could see their body. But this one is just floating like, so I knew it was different, and it was probably a timber rattler. And so I rode the boat up there closer to it, and as the boat was still moving, I stood up, and I had some 95 grain RCBS bullets in a 38 Spatial officer's model match. And I told the kids, just duck down, hold your ears, and I shot it, and he quit moving. Now, what's the chances of hitting a rattlesnake on the water? Although it had stopped, it wasn't moving. And so I got up near to it, and it was kind of still moving around. So I put another one in it, and it started to sink. I think I shot 2 or 3 times at it, but the first shot, I just dang near cut his head off. And I didn't want to do that, because I wanted to be sure it was a rattlesnake. It was 37.5 inches long, and I skinned it and put it on a board for many years out in my garage in my loading area. But if they tell you a rattlesnake won't go on the water, they're lying to you, Jerry.
like any other snake can. All the rattlesnake I killed, I guess, was big. It was about 6 feet long, and it was, we were bird hunting in southwest Georgia. One of our dogs got a little too close to it. It didn't hit the dog, but the dogs were too, we put the dogs up. A friend, I usually carry 22 pistol with me, and I shot it. We took it back to the house. I was in college and skinned it and cleaned it and fried it up and all that sort of thing. There's some alcohol involved, so I ate it. We ate some of it, but it didn't appeal to me at all. But he had that thing. He wound up. He's a legislator in Georgia now. He had that thing skinned and put mounted up on the skin was mounted up above. Say we had a little stop and go type place there in town, and he had that thing mounted up there for years. That's probably the biggest one I've seen in the wild. I usually leave them alone unless it pours us in the yard. But that snake, if it hit one of the dogs, it would have killed them. It's just too big. And of course, if it hit one of us, back in those days, they probably died before we got to the hospital. But it was huge. I don't remember how many rattles it had on it now, but it was almost big around as my calf, my leg.
This one wasn't really that big around, like most big rattlesnakes are, Jerry, but it had seven rattles on it, and there comes pretty south. I got to get back, and I got some guys coming to look at the roof. We had some bulges on the back roof for some reason. I don't know what they are, so they're going to come check it out. The roof was put on in 2011. I think I'll let her in. I don't know. It's a stranger coming up to the door here. Let's see.
Hi, Jerry.
You guys have a good afternoon. I don't hold you up, Tom. It's your TRF4DJC.
The pleasure's all mine. I really enjoy reminiscing with you. There's not many people that have the knowledge that you do on things of that nature. And we had a lot of fun with it up in Kansas. That was my hobby, and I was poor, and I had to hand load. And yes, we used a lot of wheel weights, and I'd mix in lead, tin, antimony, and get the right mix. It worked out all right. But trying to find lead now is hard. There's no smelters anymore. And used to get it from the telephone guys or the go up to the tire shop and they can give them to you or sell them to you for a nickel a pound. Try that nowadays. They're probably made out of plastic. Anyways, good hearing you, Jerry. Have a good day. 73's in 4DJC and 0TR Clip.
Have a good time. Good talking to you as usual. In 4DJC.